sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Today's show being brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Big show coming up today, including Dave Meeks, the sports editor at USA Today. We'll talk about the college football playoff poll. Ben Jones, statecollege.com, and the opening of Penn State football practice. Phil Steele. There's nobody better at analyzing college football than Phil Steele. His football annual is must-read material. Phil Steele will join us at 4:06 today. And finally, we'll also have Matt Leon from KYW in Philadelphia. We'll talk about the Eagles. Their opening preseason game is coming up. But about the Phillies, whose game against the D-backs, I think, ended about an hour ago, right? It was 14 innings last night, and that was a heartbreaker for the Phils. They were up 2-0 in the bottom of the ninth inning. David Peralta homered. They were able to get the other run across. They tied it at 2-2, and then Peralta homered again for a walk-off in the 14th inning last night. Two teams will play again tonight here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, beginning at 9:05 this evening with the first pitch at 9:40. Phillies will be in this time slot tomorrow for getaway day at Chase Field. Penn State football, they've had three practices in the books so far. They did not practice yesterday. They're back practicing after the show is over with today. You're saying, okay, no, wait a minute. Well, now, why did they give them yesterday off? Remember, Penn State is in summer session right now. In fact, finals for summer session are going to take place on Friday. So because they're in class, it's mandatory you have to give a day off during the course of a week. All right, you have to give a day off during the course of the week because they're in class. That's why they gave them yesterday off. Because I'm sure some people are saying they went three practices and then they got a day off. That's because of the class rule. Again, you know, they decided with the going into this week, they give them Monday off. James gives Mondays off all the time during the course of the season. I'm interested to see what he does Illinois week with the Friday night game as to what he does with Monday, if anything. I mean, he probably will give them Monday off like he usually does, but it's going to certainly modify their practice schedule going into that one. Then they've got practices all through the weekend, and then they'll take Monday off again, but there's a reason why they're taking Monday off again next week. Next week's the one week where they go through where they don't have any classes next week. It's the one transition week class-wise before they have the first full day of classes, which will be on the 20th. All right. Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia, is going to join us next. We'll talk about the Eagles and the Phillies as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
At Sunbury Motor Company, the letters SMC mean a lot to us. Those letters stand for a tradition of trust since 1915. SMC stand for
selling more cars
and
satisfying more customers.
SMC, it stands for Sunbury Motor Company. And when you need a Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, or Kia, you have our lowest price promise. Log on to sunburymotors.com to
see more choices
and
save more cash.
And then you can say, start my car. I'll take it.
SMC.
In the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
All right, welcome back. Great to have you with us on this great Tuesday as we head into another Phillies game coming up tonight, 9:05 the airtime, and 9:40 first pitch tonight, Phillies and the D-backs. Arizona dramatically won last night over the Phillies 3-2 in 14 innings, scoring two in the bottom of the ninth, and then David Peralta, second homer of the game to win it in the bottom of the 14th last night. We'll talk about the Phillies in a moment with Matt Leon. Also, next half hour, Dave Meeks, the sports editor at USA Today. We'll talk about the college football poll that USA Today does in conjunction with Amway. We'll discuss that with him in the next half hour. Phil Steele. Doesn't get any better college football talk than with Phil Steele. He'll join us at 4:06 today. Final half hour, Ben Jones, statecollege.com on the opening of Penn State football practice. As I mentioned previously, the Nittany Lions go back to work today. They had yesterday off. And as I explained, the reason they had yesterday off is the players are in class. And if players are in class, there's a mandatory day off you have to give them. way the rules work, so they got yesterday off. But it doesn't hurt anyway. Sunday was a hard practice for them anyway. All right, let's get to Matt Leon. KYW in Philadelphia, a lot to talk about between the Eagles and the Phillies. I mean, the ridiculousness of the Eagles. My goodness, they give Howie Roseman and Doug Peterson extensions. What are they thinking? Matt, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Good to be with you.
Let's talk about the huge mistake the Eagles just made in extending the contracts of Howie Roseman and Doug Peterson. I mean, were you shocked that they would make such a gigantic mistake after winning the Super Bowl?
Well, yeah, you would think they'd want them to prove some sort of success before they latched on long term. I mean, obviously this was kind of a no-brainer. I actually think Jeffrey Lurie said that. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Right. They've got a good thing going now, and no need to even have this be something that is even talked about as in if it's going to happen. Just get it done and put it in the rearview mirror.
I want to talk about these two guys for a moment because Howie Roseman was there. Then Chip came in, and Chip, like, basically, he's like, here, why don't you go clean out the back closet? Doug Peterson was a guy that everyone felt that Andy Reid was calling all the plays, so what kind of offensive coordinator he was. How different are their reputations just based on, I don't know, 18 months?
Oh, it is amazing. Specifically with Peterson, I really kind of put Peterson in the same, it's the same career arc in Philadelphia as we saw for Charlie Manuel. When Charlie Manuel was hired, people rolled their eyes. The only reason he's getting the job is because of Jim Tomey. They didn't want to work hard to make a hire. And then all of a sudden, Charlie Manuel wins the World Series, and he is the guy they need. And now he is one of the most beloved figures in Philadelphia sports. Doug Peterson, when he was hired, people rolled their eyes. He's only here because of Andy Reid. They didn't want to work hard to go find somebody new. They just wanted somebody they were comfortable with. And as you said, 18 months later, now Doug Peterson, people scoff at anyone who says anything about Peterson. He is, you know, arguably the best coach in the NFL. It really is a fascinating dynamic. And you look at Howie Roseman, his road's maybe even more interesting because right. How often do you see guys get a second act with the same organization like this? You know, where, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, they're basically pushed to the side. And then they rise back to the top and have the success he did. It's really an interesting run that he has had, and probably says more about Chip Kelly in the long run than it does anybody else when you think about it.
No, I agree. I agree with that. Although, has anyone ever, and I'm sure they have, asked Howie Roseman, what did he learn really from the first time around? And I mean pro and con. It is only sometimes there's things that you do right the first time around. You sit back and you say, you know what? I know I did that right. Because in retrospect, I can tell I did it right. And usually the question is also phrased in like, what did you learn? In other words, what did you do wrong before did you correct? So what did he learn the first time that he did right and felt great about? And what adjustments did he make second time around when he got a second chance?
I know he's talked about that, and I know he's talked about it. It was a kind of humbling, and it was the type of thing I think you had to really look in the mirror and decide where you're going to go from there. I don't know that I've heard any specifics as far as like what he's learned and stuff like that, because they've always been very, you know, he does a lot of the same things now that he did then as far as cap being, mm-hmm. you know, being cap conscious and stuff like that. They've always been very good about that. I mean, you think about since he's been around and, you know, kind of brought up with Joe Banner years ago, the Eagles have never been a team that's been in trouble with the cap. They maybe been up against it and stuff like that, sure. But they've never been one of these teams that's had to, you know, ferociously dump people in the off season because they can't afford to pay a contract that's coming due in 5 days and stuff like that. He also may have learned some lessons about dealing with people, stuff like that. You know, but like I said, I haven't heard anything specifically like that as far as, you know, things that really kind of changed his dynamic, changed his direction from one run to the next.
All right. This Eagles camp has not had a lot of news in it, which is sometimes a really, really good thing. So what kind of news have you taken out of this camp so far?
They kind of throttled back a little bit with Carson Wentz. He was doing some 11-on-11 work, and then they took him back. They are adamant, no setbacks or anything. I think he did get some live-action work, and some guys got kind of close to him, and they might have gotten a little freaked out that some kind of weird injury or, you know, weird setback could occur. So you haven't seen much of that. Zach Ertz hasn't practiced the last few days. Sounds like it might be some sort of an injury. I don't think it's anything to get really upset about. I mean, when you look at training camps and spring trainings and stuff like that, really the only news is bad news. You know, there's very little legitimate headlines that come out of something like this that are good. The only thing that are bad are so-and-so lost for the season, you know, or so-and-so is hurt for the first 12 weeks of the year. So things just keep moving right along, and when they're doing that, I think everybody should feel pretty good about things heading into the first preseason game on Thursday.
What do you think about the Phillies? They've had, you know, Cabrera had a big hit. Franco had the big walk-off. They split in Boston. You know, they avoided the big arms, but they split in Boston. What's your thoughts on the Phillies right now?
I think they're in position to win this thing. I think they didn't make the high profile sexy moves at the deadline, but when you look at adding an Asdrubal Cabrera, they're going to be adding Wilson Ramos, who whenever he is ready to go, could be a week, could be a couple weeks, is an all-star catcher.
Matt, that is a big time move. That's a 297 hitter, 14 home runs, who's really good behind the plate. And I think the one game they lost in Boston was because they couldn't keep the Red Sox running game down.
Yeah, and I think people are underselling that move because Ramos is on the DL right now and yes, because there's not like an immediate tangible result. I don't want to say people are dismissing it, but I don't think it is getting the credit for being the type of move that it really is when you think about adding that type of talent behind the plate. And I'll tell you what, who I think might actually end up being the most important addition they had midseason here, it's Roman Quinn, who they brought up from AAA, who healthy, he would have been up here as a starting outfielder, I think, 3 years ago.
But he has just been
hammered with injuries throughout his career, and they're all different things. It's not like he has a chronic hamstring issue or something like that that he's constantly dealing with. He has suffered all different types of injuries throughout his career, and it's kind of hampered, I don't even know if I want to say hampered his development. It's just hampered his availability to the point where it's hard to make an organizational decision about him where you can count on him. But they brought him up, and I'm not saying he's going to be a starter, but I think he could be kind of like, for the everyday lineup, what Sir Anthony Dominguez has been for the bullpen, as far as that silver bullet that he find a perfect spot to pinch run him, or the perfect spot to put him in defensively, or the perfect game to give him a start. He could be a real boost. So I think if you and I talked 3 weeks ago, one of the concerns with this team would be depth. You know, the starting eight, they pretty much have locked in who they are and what they're going to get. But the bench was really weak. Now all of a sudden you add Cabrera, Kingery goes back to being a reserve guy. You're going to add Ramos, so you're pretty much going to have Ramos and Alfaro, and all of a sudden Andrew Knapp, who's really struggled as a number two catcher, you don't have to lean on him. And you add a Roman Quinn, and now you don't have a Trevor Plouffe, you know, a career, you know, a guy who's basically a quad A player at this point as your top outfielder. Now you've got a dynamic, athletic talent that can play all three positions. I really like their chances. Their starting pitching has given them a chance basically every night since opening night. There's no reason to think that's going to stop. They're starting to hit the ball more now. They are hitting the ball out of the ballpark. They're going to be tough. They're going to be really tough. And, I mean, they're closing in now with the best record in the National League.
Exactly.
You know, at some point, I think nationally, you kind of have to stop patting them on the head and just kind of expecting a regress to the mean and figure, you know what, we're coming into the second week of August here, and this team's playing some of its best baseball. So I'm quite interested to see how this plays out here, because I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Obviously, the last 13 seasons I've done the State College Spikes games here, which means, of course, seeing the Williamsport Crosscutters. So I did Franco's first game, Cesar Hernandez's first game. I mean, Knapp, all these guys, one of them, and he is the single most disruptive, the single fastest player I've seen in 13 years here, Roman Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is the most disruptive player in 13 years I've seen in this league.
And if you can add a guy like that in a pennant race, that is going to be huge, because you look at where they are now. You know what? A guy like Odubel Herrera has struggled a little bit here the last few weeks, so maybe you can afford to give him a day or two off a week now because you've got a Roman Quinn. And they're just in a good spot. I think you've got to give Matt Klentak a lot of credit for the guys they added. Not just the guys they added, but they did it at a pretty limited cost. You know, you got Ramos basically for cash considerations or a player to be named later. And the kid they gave up for Cabrera has a lot of talent, but he's kind of a lottery ticket as a double-A pitcher. You know, they're still in very good shape. They're still very young. And I think they probably looked at each other, not us. Let's go do this. And it's interesting because I think everybody was kind of depressed they didn't get Manny Machado. And now you kind of look at it, you know, maybe they were better off not mortgaging the farm. As good as Machado is, maybe they didn't need to give up five guys for 2 months. And they're going to be okay.
In fact, the Phillies did not give up one of their top 30 prospects. Didn't give up one.
You know, and you added one of the best middle infielders in the National League in Cabrera and an all-star catcher. You know, not bad. Not bad at all.
Not bad at all indeed. And, again, I watched the Phillies-Red Sox when they played, right? Because, look, right now the Red Sox are a measuring stick. The Phillies were toe-to-toe with them for all, 13, 9, 22 innings. I mean, toe-to-toe with them.
Yeah, and what'd they give up? Three runs in 22 right. innings? Because one game went 13 innings?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
it.
You know, that's there's a lot to get excited about. You know, I mean, even if they don't, you know, if they fall just short of the postseason, this team is still ascending. Like, you know, they haven't hit the top of the bell curve yet. So I just hope people around here just kind of enjoy this pennant race, because I think it's a little bit of a bonus. It's a group that's ahead of schedule. It's a group that's fun to root for, and it's a group that's just going to keep getting better.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Matt Leon, KYW Philadelphia. Great to have him on board with us today. First of many today, because coming up next, Dave Meek's USA Today. The initial coaches poll put out by USA Today was put out over the weekend, and Penn State at number 9 in that poll. We'll talk to Dave about that, plus other issues. And also, Phil Steele at 4:06 today, and Ben Jones, statecollege.com, on the opening of Penn State football training camp. They're back at work today as the Nittany Lions get ready for the 2018 season and the opener with Appalachian State on September 1st. All right, Dave Meeks, next half hour, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. You're not going to deal with a better dealership than Sunbury Motors. Better people are going to get you the best deal on any vehicle you have out there. And believe me, they'll stand by it all the way. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Talking about 103 years worth of collateral they've built up with the community, with that great dealership. All right, this day in sports history, then Dave Meeks, sports editor of USA Today, will talk about the initial coaches poll that was put out. Penn State number 9 in that poll. Next half hour, the great Phil Steele. Phil Steele's one of the best. In fact, he might, you know, when it comes to, if you want to subscribe to something that is the total package as a college football magazine, Phil Steele is absolutely the one. I mean, there's a distance between Phil Steele and what's second. Then final half hour, Ben Jones, statecollege.com, as Penn State goes into its fourth preseason practice coming up today. First, this day in sports history, in 1907, Washington Senators pitcher Walter Johnson won his first major league game, defeating the Indians 7-2. He went over 400 in his career. I want to say he won 424. He's second only to Cy Young. One of the great race drivers of all time, Jimmy Clark of Great Britain, in 1965, won his fifth consecutive Grand Prix. 1985. Now, this was ridiculous. This was mid-season, already gone through the 1981 strike. Already had gone through that. The players went on strike again at midseason. And the strike lasted 2 days. And they ended up with a 5-year agreement between the players' union and the team owners, ending the 2-day strike. The season resumed the next day. It was. I remember it distinctly. I remember, you always remember where your team is. The Red Sox were playing the White Sox in Chicago, and I was like, this is absurd. We're going to stop the season in the middle. You know, when it comes, the labor situation between baseball, its union, and the owners, and I'm not assigning any fault here one way or the other because they're both at fault. In previous years, up till 1994, because there has not been a labor stoppage in baseball in 24 years. But here's the problem. Nobody's forgotten it. Nobody's forgotten that they shut the season down. Nobody's forgotten about the lengthy strikes that they had in the 80s. For them to get what they have now, people haven't forgotten it. And not only that, but what's happened is that baseball has run into problems because the NBA now is more popular. The NFL is exponentially more popular, and they've got a big problem. And they can't afford a labor stoppage because guess what? The next one may shut them down. Bill Mazeroski, and the odd thing is baseball is a $9 to $10 billion industry. I mean, financially, they're doing great. Players are doing great. Owners are doing great. 1987, Bill Mazeroski's uniform number 9 officially retired from active service by the Pittsburgh Pirates. One of the great defensive second basemen of all time. And, of course, he hit the World Series game winner against the Yankees in 1960 in Game 7. Sailing over, yes, Yogi Berra's head in left field. And Tony Gwynn in 1999 got his 3,000th career hit. What a hitter Tony Gwynn was. All right, Dave Meeks, USA Today. The initial coaches poll is out. Penn State is number 9 in that poll. Dave, it is always great to hear you on the other end. Welcome back.
Steve, I'm doing great. It's really great to talk to you guys. Hope everything's wonderful up there in State College. It's 90 and very humid today in D.C., so hopefully you're doing a little better than that.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, tell us a little bit, just so everyone understands, how the poll actually does work. I think people can guess how it works, but you can tell us exactly how it works.
Well, there's lots of polls out there. One of the things that makes college football so much fun is not everybody plays everybody. A lot of based on opinion, how things match up. We have the poll that involves the coaches, the 65 coaches we use from the top level of college football. It rotates. They're picked at random by the American Football Coaches Association. And really, we are just the administrator of the poll. We help promote it. We help drive the message for it around the country. We take the trophy on a tour. That's how we met when I was up at State College with the trophy last season. And every year, you'd be surprised. People pay attention to who has a vote in the poll. It rotates around even among conferences. I did look down before we had our visit today to see that James Franklin does have a vote this year. And contrary to what – there's jokes about all this sometimes, that SIDs send in votes and all that. It's not really the case. We find the coaches take it very, very seriously. They know that it matters. We don't reveal any coaches' votes during the regular season. We reveal the vote one time only at the end of the season when the Crystal Football is awarded.
When do they have to have these votes in that? Because obviously you've got a deadline with the paper, but when did they need to have the vote in so that you can then move forward with it?
We get them in as soon as the action's over on Saturday. We do have to wait. You technically need to wait for every game to be played coming in from the West Coast, which, as you guys know, early in the season you have some of those crazy times where you have USC might be finishing up against Utah. Sometimes the Pac-12 will open up with a conference opener starting at 11 p.m. Eastern, right? And so we have to wait until all those are in. We can't ask any coach to have a vote in when there's still two teams on the field. So after that, things move pretty quickly, and I have someone assigned to, outreach, I call it. That means calling coaches who don't have their vote in to get it in. It's all very friendly, and they're very busy, and they're really great to work with. And I got to tell you, we never have an issue. And even if we did, we have the AFCA and Todd Berry behind us if we need any help. But the coaches take it very seriously. Sometimes, if you're not getting a vote, it's really because a team is traveling or something's going on with the team.
What if a coach wishes to split a vote? For example, all right, I'll pick a circumstance. Say it's November, there are only 2 undefeated teams. Coach wants to make both of them number 1. Can they do that?
Yeah, we've never done that for the regular season. We have done that as we've headed into the playoffs, and we've talked about it. You know, in my opinion, it doesn't necessarily bother me. It makes it a little tricky for the computers to count it, but, I mean, you're basically just taking the points awarded for the number one team from each coach, right, and you're dividing that in two. The question becomes, where it gets tricky is how does it affect that guy's vote for the second coach? I mean, you know, this is not a PGA Tour event where the money just filters down, right? And you just divide more among the guys behind him. You now have a guy who's voting differently from everybody else. So that's been the issue in terms of the regular season.
Right. What's your level of excitement with this particular year? I know there's obviously been some off-the-field stuff that USA Today is doing a great job of covering, but what's your level of excitement about the upcoming season?
Always very excited. You know, I love college football. I think that football is going through an evolution in terms of developing safer ways to play the game. But I have spent a lot of time around college coaches in particular, as you know. And, you know, I think people tend to paint with a broad brush and don't realize I've met so many coaches just who have dedicated their lives to just helping people, coaching people, not only in football, but off the field. And you see these relationships between these guys and these coaches years after they've stopped playing for them. I think that only happens for the most part at the high school and the college level. And, you know, to me, it's one of the great passionate sports in the United States. And so every year is different. I know our poll makes it look like every year is not different, but, you know, you never know. You know, I always say this. You look at teams like Wisconsin. If you look at these, the way the poll shook out this year in the preseason, it also mirrors kind of what people are expecting within the conferences, right? You'll notice right. that the conference order kind of matches up right. with the full poll, but it never turns out that way. And so, you know, I would say that you have, you know, basically they're calling for a Wisconsin versus Ohio State in the Big Ten playoff. Well, maybe that could happen, but you could easily see Penn State or Michigan State or Michigan, or even, you know, you never know from the other side who's coming up. You know, I expect Nebraska in the Big Ten, maybe not this year, but trust me, I've spent some time with Scott Frost last year. He is a big deal of the program that is going to be on the rise.
Right, that's a good point. Dave, USA Today is a brand 36 years. It is established. What does having this poll does this poll enhance the brand or get the brand name out there even more so, even though you are an established?
Absolutely, it does. And I'll tell you, you know, there's not that many national sports operations that do it the way we do it anymore. You know, there just aren't. As you've seen the shrinkage in the media industry and certainly cutbacks in the print side of the business, we have a very strong digital audience. I don't think people realize that the USA Today Sports Media Group, just in sports, on our digital sites alone, is about 42.5 million unique visitors per month. So that's a big sports brand that people rely on. And to me, this gives us another great conversation point. You know, I came to the Trophy Tour event, and that was really one of my favorite days in this job, you know, getting to visit State College and sit outside on a beautiful day in college football with you guys. And then I went to the trophy stop, and we had Franco Harris come in from Pittsburgh to meet fans and shake hands at the trophy. And, you know, he only was really asked to do that for a couple hours, but he didn't do that. There was a huge line to see him, and he stuck around and visited with every single person who was waiting there to see him. And to me, that's the kind of stuff you see in college campuses and around this game that make it so great.
What challenges are there in a sports room when something, you know, as an example of Ohio State, happens? What are the challenges, and what's on your checklist saying, okay, we have to make sure we're covered here, here, and here? What's the challenge of that?
Well, the challenge, from my standpoint, is to be very credible and very responsible and very focused on not saying more than we can say based on the news that we know. And you do have opinion columnists who are going to argue various points. You know, we've had actually two columnists argue the separate side of this issue. One was saying that, you know, if Urban Meyer didn't report this and didn't know about this, then he should be gone. Another saying, well, if he's saying on Friday he did report this, then maybe he's met the law and it's not about him. I think you and me, we don't really know all that happened.
That's right.
We do know that there's various rules on things being reported, and we don't know the nature of what happened. We know what the coaches said on Friday, and to me, my biggest concern is I don't want us to go beyond the news that was as we know it. I don't want us to go beyond the facts. I don't want us to assume anything. I want us to wait and give people the chance to comment. You know, this has been a long running saga, obviously, between Zach and Courtney Smith. And there are, in the midst of all that, if you think about it, with Title IX on these college campuses, a lot of these rules have been very evolving over the same period of time. So I think there has been probably delays, probably mistakes being made here and there in how things are handled. But I also don't think you have to rush to the conclusion that that means someone automatically loses their job. We just don't know that.
Right. And over time, there have been other things that have been covered. Now, obviously, one of them was here. But there have been other places that have run into issues such as this. How much do you learn on a even by a week-by-week basis as someone that's in charge as to how to handle it? Do you handle something different now than maybe you would have handled 20 years ago differently?
I think so. I mean, my job is to make sure that we're capturing all perspectives here. And I remember when Penn State went through it, went through with the Sandusky scandal and how horrible all that was. You know, I talked to a lot of people from all sides of that, many, many very devoted Penn State alums and friends of mine, people I know across the country. And, you know, often you find when these things happen on a college campus that the people very closest to that school are just as horrified by what's going on as everyone else, and you have to try to understand that. And it isn't a case of where everyone's looking out for the football team or everyone has a single tunnel vision on this. You know, people do react in different ways. I also think that these scandals all tend to get treated the same. You know, they get treated the same at every single school, and they're not all the same. Every one of them is different. You know, we don't even really know at this point what happened at Ohio State in terms of what was reported and who and when. That's all going to come out. And so I think that you have to, like, wait and see. It does take some time. It's a very impatient world. You have to wait and see kind of what the details were, right?
Exactly. And that's exactly the tact that we've taken here. Like, hey, look, when something happens, we'll talk about it. But let's see what the results happen to be.
I did find it interesting, didn't you, that on, you know, the statement that Urban Meyer put out Friday did not sound ambiguous.
No, it did not.
It did not sound like he did not think that he hadn't done this right or he had been vague. It sounded like he understood what the rules were. And I can tell you, we have pulled his contract, and his contract does stipulate what he's supposed to do in those situations. So he would be aware of it, and what he said Friday was consistent with that. So we'll have to wait and see what that looks like. You know, I also think in all of this, he and his wife, he had acknowledged that he and his wife in the past had tried to counsel the Smiths of the couple, yeah. And maybe that was a case where they were trying harder than maybe they needed to try to be there, you know, counsel them and help them out in that way. But, you know, what he said Friday was, in addition to all that, he did follow all the protocols and procedures, as the phrase he used, not only there but at Florida. So he did not sound like a coach who was unfamiliar with it and did not know.
Right, exactly. As opposed to Chicago.
Right.
Because in Chicago, he acted like he just got a text the night before.
Yeah, that is odd. I think, you know, those conflicting narratives is what has everyone, I think, talking even more about this. And it's hard to say what was going through his mind that day. You know, I just can't speculate. Who knows?
Nobody
he didn't
knows.
Want to talk about it, obviously. But clearly what he said on Friday was his actions were that he had followed all the rules. So
I want to finish up by talking about the poll for a moment. Now, here,
sure.
I'll give everybody a good example. Who was the number who was the number three team a year ago? It was Florida State. Okay,
yes.
Florida State played Alabama in the opener. Quarterback
never heard from again, right?
Okay. Quarterback got hurt again. Into the witness protection program they went. So
how many times? Hey, you know, Steve. How many times have you seen that? How many times have you seen a team? I know you remember this team. It's a Big Ten team. I remember when Brady Hoke came to Michigan and he went down to play to Alabama in that preseason game and just got annihilated.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that happens. But how? For you, how interesting is it that when you sit down and you put together a top five, and it's a vote upon as a top five, the last 4 years, it seems like it's pretty similar year in, year out. To start the season, it doesn't mean that's how it ends.
Well, it is looking a little bit like the Alabama Invitational, that's for sure. You know, they've been in it every single year. I've got relatives in Alabama. You think you have it bad? I've got relatives who call me up in the preseason and ask me questions like this. Who do you think will be in the playoff with us this year?
That's nice. Yeah, that's just great.
And they're writing in Sharpie. That's not in pencil. They're writing Alabama in a Sharpie. We're in. Now that's pressure on Coach Saban. If you don't think that's pressure, how'd you like to have that pressure? It's just assumed by your fan base you're going to be in the National Football Playoff every year.
Well, they already bought tickets for it, so, I mean, that is even more pressure. So,
But, I mean, that's what makes it the fun. You know, Penn State's got an interesting team this year. You got some.
Yeah.
I think Big Ten, to me, has the most interesting cast of quarterbacks. I think there's some great-looking quarterback questions, great quarterback questions in the Big Ten that could pan out this season. There's some players out there with a lot of talent, some of them less proven, but sort of known in terms of what they can do, including the kid at Michigan State, who I think is very underrated.
Milwaukee is really good.
Yeah.
Milwaukee, I obviously saw it firsthand. He is very, very good, Dave.
And you've got McSorley, and you've got Haskins coming at Ohio State to look good in his preview, and you've got Shea Patterson transferring in and playing right away from Ole Miss at Michigan.
That's all so, in one division.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? And I always say this about the Big Ten. You look around the different leagues, and one thing I think the Big Ten gets overlooked for is there's often some really good quarterbacks in the Big Ten.
Yeah, and then we'll see what Alex Hornibrook does over at Wisconsin. It'll be pivotal for that as to what he does. Well, you mentioned it's hot down there. Just so you know, we moved my daughter into her new place in Alexandria, Virginia on Saturday, so we know how hot it is.
Oh, you were down here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was you picked a good one. That was nice and humid. We've had a lot of rain, and then it stopped raining Saturday just to kind of bake it out in for a day, and luckily that was the day you were moving. But by the way, that's a beautiful place, Alexandria.
Yeah. It's a great place. Hey, thanks so much. You know I always appreciate it. I always just enjoy the conversation back and forth. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Absolutely. Look forward to doing it again this season. Call me whenever. Take care, guys.
Dave Meeks, USA Today. Dave joined us back in – well, we've had him on – this is the third time we've had Dave on because we had Dave on the phone I think it was in late November, early December last year, and then we also had him on here in the Sunbury Motor Studio. Dave came over to the Sunbury Motor Studio here in State College and joined us here in the chair talking about this last year. That's why he talks about, you know, being out here in, quote, as he always calls it, Happy Valley and talking to everybody. That's because he was here in the studio. So it's great to have Dave back on the show. Penn State debuts at number 9 in the poll. Now, the AP poll and the coaches' polls, they're nice. They don't figure at all in the college football playoff. They don't figure at all. The committee makes the determination on that across the board. Still, USA Today will declare its national champion. AP declares its national champion. I mean, can their national champion be different than the college football playoff winner? Yeah, sure, it can be. I mean, in other words, last year, if they wanted to pick Central Florida, for example, they could have done that. And, you know, they do have the right to do that. They don't have to follow what's going on, but the college football playoff makes it pretty cut and dried for them in the end when it goes to the final poll. But polls, you know, Penn State starts at number 9. People go, oh, they're 9. It's like, look, it's a starting point. That's all that matters. Remember, Florida State, as I pointed out today, was number 3 in the poll last year. LeFrancois got hurt in the opening game against Alabama. They got blown out in the second half. And, you know, Alabama went on to win the national championship. All right, next half hour, Phil Steele. We're going to get Phil's rundown on several teams, including many in the Big Ten East. I want to ask Phil also about Wisconsin. You know, I'm really going to take a look at Penn State's schedule in some ways. Get his thoughts on Penn State, but Penn State's schedule with some of the big games they have on there, because Phil has – nobody has a greater grasp on what everybody has across the country. In other words, if I were to sit there and – ask Phil right now, Appalachian State. He and I could have a really great conversation about Appalachian State. He knows something about everybody. His magazine is the best going. Today's show brought to you by the good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.